Do not continue with this folly and put your life at risk. The Forgotten support our queen, Holt said in a low voice. They will protect her. We will find a way. The Forgotten are not here, Rasmus, Norling snapped. They have never been here. They will never be here. This is not some story of divine justice. There will be no magical intervention. This is a tragedy. We must leave. I won't leave, I said, my voice shaking slightly. I couldn't. Not when people were relying on me. Not when my father was at risk. I pressed my hands against the desk. If I leave, I'll just look even more guilty. I have to find a way. Your Majesty, no. I can't leave. A wise choice, Holt said. A foolish one, Norling said. Holt ignored her. We must focus on fortifying the city, he said. Rationing must be put in place, in case of a siege. I will send men to protect our water supply. He talked through the strategy and I tried to focus, but everything he said was defensive. We would strengthen the walls, add to the guards, protect the food, as though we just needed the resolve to hold strong until Sten gave in. So if my plan didn't work, if I couldn't convince him to stop his attack, what would we do then? All I had on my side was science, and the bubbling rumors that I was chosen by the Forgotten. They didn't exactly mesh together, and most people couldn't really believe in my supposedly divine ascension. The Gustavites had planned an entire campaign around the idea that I was rotten, just like the court, that the Forgotten despised me. And maybe their feelings had come from an honest place, once, a desperate need for change. But they still had tried to murder me, still encouraged others to turn against me. They'd been quiet since Sten's attack, since I'd distributed those pamphlets. But they were still an unknown quantity, potentially dangerous. But I wasn't who they thought I was. I cared, I did, and I wanted to make changes. I wanted to help people. Even if I wasn't really chosen by the Forgotten, surely our aims might fit together. If Sten took the capital, it would be back to the way the court was before, undoing all of the Forgotten's supposed interventions. "Do you have anything to add, Your Majesty?" Holt said. It was an insane idea, to convince the Gustavites to be on my side, to somehow twist around their entire agenda. If I could gently alter their ideology, but it would take subtlety and time, and the nobles would be furious. It wasn't exactly the perfect solution. I'll go to the Minster this afternoon, I said instead, to pay my respects. Make another show of my connection to the Forgotten and let people think of it what they would. It seemed that faith would stop people from abandoning me, even if it wouldn't do me much more. But could I really use people's beliefs against them like that? If Holt had been involved in the murders, if he had been manipulating me all along, a puppet queen for his twisted agenda, could I manipulate them too, to save myself? Yes, I thought, and I hated myself slightly for the knowledge. I would manipulate them if it meant staying alive. Norling was the first to leave after the council meeting concluded, marching off to arrange the minister visit, while Holt reflected on his notes. I paused, too, standing behind my chair. I could ask him about his trip to the palace, or at least about things related to it, find some way to uncover the truth. But if it had been suspicious, and I revealed what I knew too soon, it was too risky. I had begun to walk toward the door when Holt spoke. Your Majesty, I hoped I could speak to you, in private. I glanced at Norling's now empty seat, and my heart started pounding. What could he want to say to me that he couldn't say in front of her? All right, I said carefully. What is it?
You know that I am here to support you, Your Majesty. My goal, my only goal, is to help you survive.
I know. And I did. Despite all my suspicion, I'd never doubted that he genuinely supported me. His belief was fervent, unsettling in its force. I was frightened by what he might have done in order to create this new court, what he might still be willing to do, but I knew he wouldn't directly hurt me, which made his statement all the more unsettling.
So, you know that I am speaking to your best interests when I say that William Fitzroy is a danger to you in more ways than you realize.
I know, I said again. You told me.
But obviously I have not made the details clear enough because you have ignored my advice. I told you that people are talking about you, saying you plotted to take the throne together. There are some filthy lies in there, Your Majesty, things that I do not wish to repeat, but Sten is more than happy to endorse them, and they are doing real damage to you. They are eroding our message of the Forgotten's chosen queen.
I appreciate your concern, I said, but if people are already talking, I can't change that now. It'll only look more suspicious if I push him away, like they stumbled onto the truth.
That is not all, Your Majesty. I know you wish to see the good in people, and I respect you for that. But I have been conducting my own research into the murders and into Fitzroy's behavior. Something has not been right.
Why can't Norling hear about this?
She disagrees with me, Your Majesty. As she does about many things, she did not consider the avenues worth pursuing, but I believe she is wrong.
And you've found evidence?
He'd been assembling a case against Fitzroy. Not openly, not with Norling, but in secret, alone. Because Fitzroy was a problem, and he needed to be dealt with. Because he damaged Holt's idea of the perfect chosen queen. An official investigation would find nothing on him, but if Holt was determined enough and manipulated the evidence enough...
I found a mention in the diary of King Jorgen's chief advisor. He commented that the king planned to disinherit Fitzroy.
Fitzroy was never inherited to begin with,
but he always had that hope. We all knew that, Your Majesty. It seems very possible to me that Fitzroy was tired of being out of favor and decided to act to change that.
By murdering everybody?
He murdered many people, Your Majesty. Everyone who might have known anything about his so-called legitimacy. He wished to unsettle things so that he could step into the throne instead.
Holt looked terrifyingly sincere. That would be odd if he were the murderer himself. But I didn't trust the sanity of anyone willing to kill so many people. If Holt could convince himself that he was an agent of the Forgotten, murdering for the greater good, surely he could convince himself that Fitzroy deserved to be punished as well. Surely he could perform this one final task.
Fitzroy didn't make any move for the throne, I said carefully. He didn't want it.
When he realized that someone in the city had survived, I believed he changed his strategy. He decided to win you over, whether for a later betrayal or to gain the crown through marriage, I do not know.
Stop! The word burst out of me. That's enough. I trust Fitzroy, which is more than I can say for you right now. I almost asked him about his presence in the palace. The words were on the tip of my tongue, ready to be thrown at him, but then I saw his expression and I paused. He looked resolved, as though the last piece of a terrible truth had fallen into place, and now he only had to react to it.
I am sorry that you feel that way, Your Majesty, he said, but the problem must be dealt with, regardless of your feelings. If you will excuse me.
He bowed, rather stiffly, and strode out of the room.
The problem must be dealt with. The words rang in my ears.
Dealt with, like Holt may have dealt with the rest of the court, like a weed needing to be ripped away in order for his precious new queen to flourish. I found Fitzroy in the lab, going through more of his father's papers. He glanced up as the door cracked open.
Fitzroy, I closed the door behind me, sealing the rest of the castle away. You have to go.
Go?
He frowned.
Freya, what's wrong?
Holt, he thinks you're a threat. He shook his head, turning back to the notes. People always think I'm a threat. I've survived so far.
I had to make him understand. I hurried forward, grabbing his shoulder. He says you have to be dealt with. He's going to kill you, Fitzroy.
He didn't even look up.
He's not going to kill me.
How could you be so calm? You have to leave. Find somewhere safe to go.
I turned away decisively, as though he would move just because I willed it so.
Once this is all over, you'll be able to come back, whatever happens.
Leave? That got his attention.
I'm not going to leave.
Yes, you are. It's common sense, Fitzroy. He's planning to kill you. You shouldn't stay here.
I grabbed his arm, ready to haul him off the stool, but he didn't budge.
Holt is not going to hurt me, Freya.
His voice was low and calm, as though I was the one who didn't understand things here.
He's a bit strange, but he's not a murderer.
You don't know that. Somebody here is, and he wants to get rid of you.
Either way.
So I won't give him the pleasure. I'm your queen.
I stuck up my chin.
You're supposed to do as I say,
but I won't.
I could have shoved him. I almost did, to jolt some sense back into his idiot brain.
I could order you, I said. I could kick you out of the fort. My advisors would be more than happy if I did.
You could, but you won't.
He turned back to the notes again. I tugged on his arm, pulling him back around.
Fitzroy, this isn't an empty threat. I don't want you to get hurt.
Good, Fitzroy said. Then let's concentrate on figuring this out who the murderer is.
When I didn't move, he sighed.
You need me here, Freya. You can't expect me to leave just because Holt is acting oddly.
Fitzroy, I said again, softer this time. I don't want you to get hurt because of me, all right?
And you think I want you to be hurt because of me?
I might be, I said quickly, anything to convince him. I might be, if you stay.
Because I'm going to betray you and take the crown for myself?
Why couldn't he take this seriously?
Because people are suspicious of our friendship. People are gossiping. People always gossip. They'll be happy to have something to talk about other than impending death, and even happier to move on to a better subject when one appears.
But you've heard them. They're saying we schemed together to kill your father. They think we're murderers, plotting to get us both on the throne.
I know,
he said, his voice slightly quieter. But most of them won't believe it. Not if you give them a better story.
I opened my mouth to argue again, desperation surging through me, but he shook his head.
Freya, I won't leave now, no matter what you say.
But that makes no sense. You have to protect yourself. Why would you stay if it could kill you?
He looked at me, steady, unblinking.
Okay, I know I've stayed, but I have to stay. I'm the queen, Fitzroy.
He frowned.
And I'm what? No one?
No, but you're someone who can leave, who can go and come back later and survive this whole mess. Why wouldn't you do that?
Freya.
The words were rushing out of me now, getting faster and faster. We don't need you. We can stop Sten without you, and we'll be able to solve this more quickly if we don't have to worry about your death. It's better if you leave. You have to go.
You really haven't been paying attention, have you?
You really think I'm going to leave?
Why wouldn't you? You know why, Freya.
My heart was still pounding, and now the air in the lab felt too thin. I'd never been good at reading people, at understanding them, and I couldn't let my imagination get carried away.
What do you mean?
He kissed me. It couldn't have lasted more than a second, just his lips pressed against mine, soft and warm. My stomach flipped, but before I could react, before I could think, he was moving back, hands resting on my shoulders.
What are you doing?
I whispered. He laughed softly.
You know what I'm doing,
but... He glanced at my lips again. I couldn't breathe. But then he turned away, stepping back to the table.
We have to find out where my father learned about that pigment.
My skin prickled. I needed him to leave, to be safe, but I couldn't force him to leave. I didn't want him to go, even though I did, even though it was the only sensible thing to do.
All right, I said eventually. Let's keep looking.
but it was hard to fight the urge to grab him and kiss him again.
26.
I set out for the minster that afternoon. It was supposed to be a show of piety, a desperate attempt to help my cause, but as I walked through the city, I could not stop thinking about Fitzroy. He had kissed me. William Fitzroy had kissed me. And I wanted to kiss him again. What was wrong with me? My life was in danger, and I'd been told, again and again, that Fitzroy made the situation worse. Fitzroy's life was in danger just by being here. I shouldn't even have been speaking to him. And even if I did speak to him, even if I did have feelings for him, now wasn't the time. I had a throne to keep, a city to protect. I did not have time to think about this. So I very decidedly did not think about Fitzroy. I didn't think about him when I walked down Main Street, my feet splashing in the puddles. I didn't think of him when a gentleman bowed and asked how my day had been. I didn't remember the warmth of his lips, or the way his eyes lit up when he was amused, or the thrill of him being so close. I definitely did not think about what would happen when I saw him again. But I couldn't help wondering why he had done it. I knew why he'd implied he'd done it, but that didn't mean much. Words could be misconstrued. It could have been the adrenaline of our life-or-death situation. He could have just been trying to distract me so I wouldn't force him to leave. Had he been using my feelings against me? Not that I had feelings for him, but the feelings he assumed I had, I definitely did not have, because now was definitely not the time for any sort of ill-directed attachments. And he'd kissed me, but he hadn't kissed me. Surely people normally kissed you when you seemed happy to be kissed? Surely he shouldn't just sort of kiss me and then go straight back to research, not when he had never kissed me before. It was supposed to be more. Did it count if it wasn't more? Then again, it was probably a good thing it hadn't been more. I could barely think as it was. The minster loomed ahead of me, its tower swept up in the fog. The bells tolled as I approached, marking the hour. People crowded its courtyard, calling out my name as I passed. I smiled at them, nodded my head, but walked through the front doors without further incident. The inside of the minster was almost empty. The priest stood by the altar, and he bowed at me as I entered, but he did not speak. I walked down the aisle, my heart pounding. So much had changed since the last time I had walked here, since those people had watched me, waiting, their expectation and grief filling the air. I stopped before the altar and stared up at its carved faces. I couldn't have identified even half of them. I knew the most common names of the Forgotten, like anybody, but that didn't mean I could match them to whatever idealized images people created. But as I considered them all, I decided that the tall woman had to be Valenthe. She had a kind face and determination in her eyes, like someone who would never be cruel, but would never give up. She'd saved me, in a way, when Sten had attacked. Not directly, not with any divine intervention, but the idea of her necklace had made him hesitate. And now the idea of the Forgotten was helping me again, making people support me, making them fall to their knees and ask for my blessing. I didn't believe in them. Perhaps beings had lived in Epria a long time ago and been smarter and wiser than people were now, but they weren't immortal. They weren't watching out for us. They weren't influencing us and preparing to return. I had to use my own wits to survive. But I sent a silent wish to them anyway, just in case. So, Madeline said as she pinned my hair in place that evening, what happened? What do you mean? She tapped lightly on the back of my neck. You've been in a daze all afternoon. You keep smiling to yourself. I know that smile. Tell me. There's nothing to tell. I picked at the skin around my fingernail. I'd been not thinking about Fitzroy all afternoon. I hadn't seen him. Maybe because he was avoiding me. Maybe because he'd listened to me. Maybe because I really didn't know.
Madeline shook her head, but she didn't argue.
Do you think... I stopped.
Occasionally. Should I be thinking about something in particular?
I was just wondering. Fitzroy, he... You knew him. Before all this happened, didn't you?
Madeline twisted more strands into place.
I did.
Do you think... I never spoke to him before. Do you think he could ever like me? Really? If all these things hadn't happened?
She was quiet for a moment. Considering.
If all these things hadn't happened, perhaps not. You'd never spoken to each other, and I don't know if that would have changed. But if you're asking me if I think he could truly like you now, yes, I think so. He has always worked hard to make people like him, but he seems genuine to me.
She plucked more pins off the dresser, smiling.
So, tell me, did you kiss him, or did he kiss you?
What? I'm guessing you kissed him, if you're asking me whether he could like you.
Who's kissing somebody?
Naomi swung into the room, half her hair pinned up, half of it still loose.
What are you saying? Freya kissed somebody? Was it Fitzroy?
Madeline smiled.
Freya was just going to tell us.
My face burned.
I didn't kiss him. Why would I? I can't think about that right now. There's so much going on.
I couldn't finish that sentence.
Ah, Madeline said. So he kissed you.
How I told you, Freya, you have that expression.
Fitzroy kissed you?
Naomi practically bounced over to us.
That's fantastic. It's fantastic, right? Because you like him. Did you tell him you liked him?
I stared at the remaining pins on the dresser.
It wasn't like that.
Then what was it like? I need details.
Madeline leaned closer, adjusting my curls. Was it a good kiss?
I don't know, I said honestly.
Yes, I think so. You only think so? I've never had a kiss before. I have nothing to compare it to.
Naomi sank into a chair beside us.
Did your stomach flip? Did he put his hands in your hair?
He didn't put his hands anywhere.
Not anywhere?
It was quick.
I should have had more to say, shouldn't I? Didn't that mean it hadn't been good?
My stomach did flip, though.
I knew it, Naomi said. I knew you liked him.
Perhaps you'll have to kiss him again, if you're not sure, Madeline said.
Gather more evidence.
In the name of science.
Madeline!
I pushed her away, and she swayed, giggling.
But you want to, don't you? I can see it in your face.
That thought was terrifying, too. Almost as terrifying as the thought of not kissing him again.
Maybe.
Only maybe? Naomi said.
No, I mean, yes, yes, I want to kiss him again, but it's not the right time.
My voice rose, the words rushing out of me.
There are too many other things going on for me to worry about this, and people have already said that Fitzroy and I are plotting together. I'm not going to be foolish about this.
I don't think it makes you foolish to think about it, Madeline said, and clearly you have been thinking about it whether you want to or not.
There's nothing wrong with that, but...
I sighed. It didn't make sense.
I don't know. He kissed me, and he said he liked me before, and he said he wanted to stay, but I don't know whether it means anything.
You don't know if it means anything for him to kiss you and say he likes you and refuse to leave when an army is marching on us as we speak?
I know he's my friend, I said quickly, but I don't know
whether it was just a kiss. If that makes sense.
Some people, I'm sure some people will kiss anyone when they feel like it, and not have it really mean anything, and some people will only kiss people if they really like them. I don't know which Fitzroy is.
I don't know if you can say anyone is only one type or the other, Madeline said carefully.
I think it depends on both people and the circumstances. From what I've seen,
he cares about you, Freya.
But I'm not the person you should be asking.
I can't ask him.
Of course you can, she said with a grin. You're queen. You can do anything you like.
Norling accosted me in the corridor outside the meeting room that night.
Your Majesty, may I have a moment?
I nodded. She stood near the wall, almost in the shadows, and she beckoned me closer.
I need to tell you, Your Majesty, that we have found some of the Gustavites. We know where a few of them are staying, and the location of one of their meetings tomorrow. What would you like us to do?
We should arrest them, I knew. They tried to kill me. They could still have been the ones who killed the king. And yet, that idea came to me again, that perhaps I could talk to them. Perhaps if they knew me, they might be willing to support me. It was a crazy, dangerous idea. And yet,
don't do anything, I said. Not now.
This opportunity won't last long, Your Majesty. I just need to think about it. And figure out whether my idea was complete lunacy or only mostly insane.
Norling frowned, but she didn't argue.
Of course, Your Majesty. I stepped toward the door again. The entire remaining court would be waiting inside, whatever that meant these days. 5 people, 4. I still had to win them over, still had to seem like a good queen, despite all the things I'd done to upset them, despite everything. And Fitzroy would be in there, too. Fitzroy. My stomach jumped. The only thing scarier than seeing him again tonight would be not seeing him again, knowing he was hiding from me. I let out a long breath and stepped through the door. There was no fanfare this time, no startling announcement of my importance. But everyone looked up as I entered, sinking into bows and curtsies. The group was bigger than I'd expected. 20 people, perhaps. Holt, Naomi, Madeline, and Fitzroy, but also others I'd barely ever spoken to, people with no personal motivation to be here. And none of the women were wearing the old fashions of the court. None of them. Their skirts were smaller, slighter, with less layers. Their hair was half loose, half pinned, no strange shapes and huge wire forms in sight. Even their jewels were kept to a minimum, as though they all had decided, as one, that such things were rather gaudy after all. This was Madeline's doing. It was my doing. Madeline's, because, yes, she had changed the way I dressed, altering the styles so that they didn't swallow me, so that any natural hints of regality in me shone through, but mine, because they were emulating me. They wanted to look like I did. That meant acceptance, didn't it? That I was the leader, not the outsider. That these people, at least, were happy to see changes in the court. They were embracing me, symbolically at least, showing their support. I felt stronger just looking at them. The people who stayed. I'd spent my whole life terrified of failing to be who people wanted me to be, unable to speak in case the words were wrong, in case people laughed. But people had laughed at all my pretenses, all my ostentatious attempts to be queen. This group, this small group, was still here, still showing their support. And it might be fake, it might be politics, all part of the game, but not to all of them. Madeline believed in me, and so did Fitzroy. And if they could, why couldn't others? How many had just been playing the game of the court before, loathing it but continuing because everyone else acted that way? How many had avoided the capital to avoid it all? I was done pretending. The court had been shattered, and we couldn't rebuild it, not without a million cracks showing through. I had to be honest. I couldn't trust my advisors, and the murderer might have been on my side, so what else could I do, in the face of all that, except stop playing any sort of game and just be? Be queen as I wanted to be queen. In the court and out. Be myself. Be Queen Freya. Be whatever sort of person that turned out to be. I stepped forward to the front of the room.
Hi,
I said. An awkward start.
I just wanted to say something before, while things are quiet.
Don't cringe, I told myself. Don't think. Just keep going. I know things are incredibly uncertain right now. Uncertain and frightening. And I'm going to do everything I can to keep everyone safe. But it's still scary, not knowing what will happen. For you all to remain here, I really appreciate it. Not in terms of lands and bribes and favors, but in real, genuine... I stumbled for the words. How could I finish that? I appreciate it, I said again. And also, I know some people have been upset with the things I've done since I became queen. Torsten Wolf, certainly. That I haven't been harsher on our enemies, that I've been too concerned with the people and not put all of you first. I could feel everyone watching me. I could feel Fitzroy watching me. But I think that everyone in Epria deserves a chance. I was just nobody, 23rd in line, and now I'm queen. And I think we can be so much greater, so much better, if we help everybody, if we care about everybody. We don't need to throw jewels in rivers and cover ourselves in gold to show our worth and our strength. We can do it in other ways, by making the kingdom greater, by treating people well, by... We can be better than we are now. I know we can. We have so much, and we enjoy so much, and we can still enjoy it, still live our lives. But if we don't use that power to make things better, who even are we? And perhaps Sten disagrees, but that's what I believe. I hope you all believe it too. I held my breath, standing, waiting, as the world crashed back into me. The knowledge of who I was, where I was, what I'd done. I might have made a mistake. I could have ruined everything. Everyone was silent, waiting for me to speak again, or else just unsure what to do. Anyway, I said, to fill the quiet. I think we should relax. Have some music? Madeline smiled, sweeping back into her perfectly courtly role once again. How about charades, Your Majesty? We haven't played that in ages. Perhaps you could adjudicate. Yes, I said. Yes, that sounds perfect. Nobody ran from the room. No one muttered angrily when I stepped out of earshot. We played, and we talked, and I felt right. Still slightly drained from all the interaction, still slightly unsure of what people might do next, but something had clicked. Some knowledge that I could actually do this. I could be queen the way I wanted, and the consequences would be whatever the consequences would be.
It was a good speech, Your Majesty, Holt said later that evening. A little spontaneous, perhaps, but good.
Thank you, I said, even as I cringed away from his praise. The speech had been messy, I knew that, but I felt liberated by it. I'd laid everything out, and I'd survived. And so I knew what I needed to do. Norling mentioned that you found the Gustavites. I want you to contact them and ask them to meet with me. Tomorrow.
You want to invite them to the fort?
No, I'll meet them wherever they're planning to meet. Make it clear that we know everything about them, but that this isn't a threat. I need to talk to them about their ideas.
Your Majesty, they tried to murder you.
One of them did. But she said the others didn't help her, that most of them didn't agree, and I need to find out what they think. It's important.
It's dangerous, Your Majesty.
I looked him in the eye, hands shaking slightly. This man who might have killed everyone. For me. The man who might want to kill Fitzroy, too.
What isn't? I said.
27. I couldn't settle to sleep that night. The day's events still pulsed through me, and now that I was safe in the dark, I finally allowed myself to dwell on that kiss. Fitzroy hadn't really spoken to me all evening. Shouldn't he have at least given me a significant glance? Something? Things shouldn't continue as normal, unless the kiss didn't mean anything at all. And, all right, yes, I wasn't entirely hopeless. I could weigh the evidence, gather the facts, and see where they might point in any other scenario. His refusing to leave, his telling me he liked me, that kiss. The pointed looks during our conversation, the fact that he opened up to me, even when we had just met, despite almost never opening up to anybody. A bystander might look down on the list and decide the answer was obvious. But that missed the clear argument to the contrary. This was happening to me. I could imagine people occasionally deciding to be my friend. They'd listen to my ideas, yes, but they couldn't like me beyond that. I was queen, but I was still me. People like me might get one small, brief kiss of friendship, and we might confuse that for something more. But we didn't. It didn't make sense. With a grunt of annoyance, I climbed out of bed, waking up Dagny from her spot by my feet, and grabbed some paper. Written down, the evidence for and against seemed ridiculously unbalanced. "Because it's me" did not look like a reason at all, once it was detached from my brain. But still, it felt like reason enough. "Freya? What are you doing?" Naomi peered around her bedroom door, rubbing her eyes. "I saw your light. Did you have a breakthrough?" I clutched the paper. "No. It's all right. I was just thinking. Go back to sleep." "You're making a pro and con list about Fitzroy, aren't you?" "It's not that." She raised her eyebrows expectantly, and I sighed. "It's a what does Fitzroy think about me list." "Just go talk to him, Freya. He's the only one who could tell you." "I could, technically, but I don't know where he'll be." "He's waiting down in the lab for you. Where else would he be? You don't know that." "Oh, I do." At least if I asked him, I would know. I could stop this obsessing. The thought terrified me, the risk of humiliation too great. But I'd faced the court, hadn't I? I could do this. I guess I could gather evidence to reach a proper conclusion. Naomi laughed. "Well, go on then. Be sure to tell me how it goes." Naomi was right, of course. I wasn't sure whether that was relieving or annoying. Fitzroy was in the laboratory, more papers spread in front of him. He looked up when I walked into the room, and his smile was a little more tentative than usual. Maybe slightly awkward. Because of how I was acting? Because he regretted the kiss? I had to speak before doubt got in the way. "What did you mean?" I said. "When you said you liked me?" His smile shrank another fraction. He looked decidedly unsure now as he stood. "Was it not clear?" "Well, I assume it means you like me, but how do you like me? It's an imprecise word, really, don't you think? I mean, do you like me like I'm your friend, or do you like me like you like me in a different way?" He was walking slowly toward me. I resisted the urge to take a step backward.
"You said like a lot there. It was confusing."
"You understood what I meant."
"I did."
He moved closer still, an arm's length away.
"Do you tend to kiss your friends like that, Freya?"
"No." The word came out quieter than I'd like. "But some people do. And it was just a tiny kiss, and I knew this time, a moment before it happened." Fitzroy moved closer, and I shifted forward to meet him. My second kiss. I was kissing Fitzroy. Fitzroy's hand was curled around the back of my neck. Fitzroy's fingers were tangled in my hair. Fitzroy was... Fitzroy. How could I possibly have ever thought I didn't like him? That the way my stomach swooped and my heart raced and my thoughts calmed was an inconsequential thing. I was aware of every breath, of the blood racing through my veins, of the spot where Fitzroy's nose bumped against mine, the slight difference in height, the tiniest shift of Fitzroy's hand. I catalogued every detail, savoring them, saving them. He pulled back, paused a couple of inches from my face. Does that answer your question? I shook my head, just an inch, left and right. No. My voice came out breathy, like someone else was speaking. I had to know. There are many potential interpretations for that.
Such as?
His eyebrows rose in a challenge. You just wanted me to stop talking, or maybe you want to practice kissing, or you just want to kiss the queen, but you can't admit it, so you keep kissing me so you don't have to lie to me, or you're just very friendly with your friends. Then how's this? The question sounded grandiose, something Fitzroy the courtier would say, but then he paused. I like you not just as a friend, and I don't usually go around kissing my friends like that.
Not usually?
Not as a rule. I like you because you're you, Freya, in all your stubborn strangeness, and because you make me feel like me. I told you the first time I talked to you, that's not... I'm never sure who I really am. And it's different when I'm with you.
Well, I said with a slight smile, I think I like you too.
You think?
I think.
He laughed softly. But do you like me as a friend, or as a lab assistant, or perhaps as the old king's son who now won't leave, or
I like you as Fitzroy?
I said with a decisive nod. Well, he said, I guess I'll take that.
And he kissed me again.
The Gustavites did not agree to meet me. Holt didn't even ask them. They would run, Your Majesty, before the request was complete, he said the next day, in a soothing voice. They'd think it was a trap, or else lay a trap for you. And so we were surprising them. I wasn't sure that was safer, considering how they might react, but I wasn't going to shake in my resolve now. I cared more about fashion that morning than I ever had before. I tried on 5 different crowns and tiaras, not wanting to look too extravagant, not wanting to hide the fact that I was queen. Eventually, I settled for a simple diadem, the Star of Valenthe, hanging around my neck. Fog had settled low over the city, cloaking the alleyways, making the world feel close. Nothing seemed to exist beyond my carriage, my guards, and our small stretch of road as we proceeded through the quiet. I was going to be sick. It was all I could think about. I was always nervous before speaking, but now I truly genuinely felt like the contents of my stomach were about to spill all over the carriage floor. What was I doing? The right thing, I told myself. The thing I needed to do. It wasn't much comfort, as acid bubbled in my throat. My fingers tingled with the beginnings of panic, but I counted my breath, willing it away. The carriage stopped outside a nondescript manor house on a normal-looking street. I stepped out, ordering myself not to vomit. It wasn't that it was dangerous, although that should really have been my concern. It was that I didn't know what to expect. I had no idea what I was walking into, and yet I needed to speak to them. I knew these people hated me, and I still needed to try and change their minds. It wasn't exactly a task I was well suited for. But I was here. I could do this. A couple of guards went ahead to announce my arrival. I'd instructed them to be as non-threatening as possible, but I still cringed as they knocked on the door. If this ended in violence... It didn't. They were too sensible for that, at least. Better to pretend it was a normal gathering, to deny and deny until the lie sounded like truth. The man who answered the door remained calm, not betraying even a flash of concern when he saw the guards. When my men told him I wished to speak to them, with no mention of who we believed they were, he bowed without hesitation, his lips forming words of joyful surprise. Inside, people must have been scrambling to hide anything suspect, but the man was the picture of calm. He bowed again as I approached. "It is good to meet you," I said.
"And you, Your Majesty."
He was a good actor. he would have done well in court. He led me and two of my guards through the entrance hall and into a busy sitting room. A mishmash of people had gathered there, from boys younger than me to a woman with ghost-white hair and more wrinkles than skin. Some were dressed in rough cotton and wool, some finer clothes, a couple dressed like the lower edges of nobility, people from all parts of the city, all parts of life, perhaps 30 of them in all. The group was bigger than my court. They weren't all as good at acting as the man who opened the door. Fear vibrated through the room, and while some looked at me with wide, uncertain eyes, others looked almost aggressive, their expressions daring me to challenge them. They would be the ones to watch. No one moved to acknowledge my arrival. They all seemed too startled or else too angry. I guessed it would never have crossed their minds that the Queen might stroll into their meeting this afternoon and give them a not-quite-natural little smile. If the King had walked into my home a month ago, I'd have fallen over my own feet in shock, and I had seen him frequently, even if it was usually from afar. No one spoke. They didn't seem to know what to do. "Thank you," I said eventually. I didn't vomit on them. The first success of the meeting. "Thank you for agreeing to see me." More stares. Then the elderly woman near the door seemed to remember herself. "Your Majesty." She stood, slowly, and began to curtsy, her face contorted from the effort, like she was in pain. "No, no," I said quickly, darting forward and putting my hand on her arm. "Don't worry about that. We aren't in court." "No," a man said. "No, that we're not." He was one of the aggressive ones, with a voice sharp as wire. The elderly woman stared at my hand. "Thank you, Your Majesty," she said eventually. She didn't want me to touch her, I realized. I quickly let go. "Was there something you wished to say to us, Your Majesty?" the aggressive man said. "It must be important for you to have come personally." "I like to say things for myself and hear them for myself. I think it's easier to get the truth that way." I was still standing in the doorway. I considered walking forward, finding somewhere to sit, but perhaps it was better to stand, to not get too friendly. "I wanted to hear what you had to say. I know you care about Epria. I know that. And things are changing now, as I'm sure you've seen. I wanted to know what you think about the kingdom. I've read the original pamphlet, of course, but I ran out of momentum." It hadn't exactly been the eloquent plea I'd been hoping for. Again, everyone was silent. The wary still looked wary, the angry still looked angry, and more people looked confused. "What pamphlet, Your Majesty?" the aggressive man said, like I was trying to trick him into admitting treason. "Gustav's treatise." "Never heard of it," the man grunted. "Really? It's been all over the city." A round-faced girl near the window spoke up. "Why did you allow it again? I thought it was forbidden." I considered her. I don't think knowledge can be a bad thing, and banning something doesn't make it disappear. It just lets people twist it. People 100 years ago might not have liked it, but I thought it had good ideas, too. The court is wasteful. I don't agree with radicalism or with murder, but perhaps if people read his actual words, they might rethink that. It seemed important. "So you think people misunderstand him?" the aggressive man sneered. "I think he's not as controversial as some people might believe, and I wanted people to know that. I understand." "Forgive my rudeness, Your Majesty," said the man who opened the door, "but I don't see why you were telling us this." This definitely wasn't what I had imagined. I'd hoped for some reaction, but it would be all right. It was all right. No violence, no danger. I could say my piece, and maybe it would linger here, have an effect in time. "I just wanted everyone to know that anyone involved in attempted murder, or in hurting anybody,
will be punished, of course. But others, I want new ideas in my kingdom. I want things to be better than they've been before. If people want that, you're welcome here, as long as it's peaceful. And I guess that's all I came to say. And if you have anything to say to me, come to the fort. I do want to hear. Still no reaction. I nodded at them once and turned to leave. Why? Someone said from the room behind me. Why? It was a good question. I looked back at them. Because, I said, there's no point in fighting for the throne if you're not going to make a difference. 28. Sten continued his march. We had 3 days now, just 3, before he would arrive at the city gates. We could be mistaken about his plans, I told myself. He could stop for a few days, head elsewhere to gather more support. But our spies said he was returning, and that was unlikely to change. I had nothing. I knew it. My advisors knew it. I could win the support of the people and talk endlessly about the Forgotten, but I couldn't fight Sten and win, and I'd done little to stop his attack. I didn't know who the murderer was. It was possibly Holt, probably Holt, but I needed to be able to prove it, and to prove my innocence, too. I couldn't sleep now. I needed to use every moment to prepare. I tiptoed out of my rooms, careful not to wake Naomi or Madeline. The front door of my chambers was ajar, and 2 night guards were speaking, their low voices buzzing through the gap. But Sten's a good man, one was saying. I know he's not the heir, not by the way we've always done it, but he's a good man and a good leader, too. Shouldn't that count for something? It counts for everything, the other guard said. When his opponent is a little girl with no knowledge of war, what can she do against him? Then why are you still here? Safest path, isn't it? The second guard said. And I got nothing against our new queen. She's a nice girl, at least. If she holds out against him, then good for her. I'll be happy to support her. And if she doesn't, then Sten'll be happy enough for us to join him when she fails. He's always been a reasonable man. True enough, the first guard said. True enough, that. I paused by the gap in the door. Their words made my stomach clench. But they weren't being treasonous, just honest. I couldn't blame them for wanting to live. I crept back to my bedroom door and closed it a little more loudly. The guards stopped talking at once. By the time I reached the door again, they were standing to attention, as though the conversation had never occurred. "Can we help you, Your Majesty?" the guard on the left said. "No, that's all right. I'm just restless." I stepped into the corridor. "I'm going to walk down to my laboratory, I think."
"Then we should go with you, Your Majesty."
They should. But after that conversation, I really wanted to be alone. I didn't want to be protected by people who knew they could not protect me. Not now. "No," I said. "I'll be safe inside the fort. Wait for me here." And with the authority of a queen behind me, neither of them could protest. The corridors were eerily quiet. Sconces sent orange light flickering across the stone walls, and the high ceilings vanished into shadow. Sounds echoed and distorted in the stillness of the night, so faraway whispers seemed close. I saw no one. My lab was empty, too, devoid of Fitzroy for once. Maybe he was actually sleeping, like a normal human being at 3 o'clock in the morning. I itched to conduct more experiments, to have focus like I'd had working on the arsenic test, but I had no idea what to do. I had nothing left to test, no leads that science could pursue. So instead, I began to work through the letters again, hunting for anything, anything that might help. A hint at the king's illness, a mention of Holt. Nothing. All I gained was more of the dead king's words in my brain, this sense of him as a person, with thoughts and fears and priorities and humanity, rather than just the ridiculous caricature I had known. I didn't want to think of him as a person. It made all of it too real.
Eventually, the itch of working alone became unbearable. Maybe Fitzroy was awake upstairs. Maybe he'd be willing to help. I passed no one as I climbed the stairs. I knocked on the door to his chambers, but nobody answered. I knocked again, louder. No response. Fitzroy? Maybe he was asleep. I pushed the door open slightly. Fitzroy? The lamps inside were lit, casting a warm glow across the room. I stepped inside, leaving the door slightly ajar. The lights were on in the bedroom as well, but Fitzroy was nowhere to be seen. That was odd. If he wasn't in the laboratory and he wasn't asleep, maybe we'd missed each other in the corridors. He couldn't have gone far, though. If the lamps were any indication, he would be back soon. I wandered over to the bookshelves on the far side of the room. Even though Fitzroy had only been here a few weeks, he'd moved several books here. A couple of novels, a history book, a copy of The Scientific Method. I picked that one up, smiling. He'd actually listened to my recommendation. A few sheets of paper fluttered from between two books on the shelf. One fell to the floor, and I bent to pick it up. I recognized that near-illegible scrawl. It was a letter from his father. It was private, I told myself. I shouldn't read it, not without his permission. But the back of my neck prickled as I stared down at it. A single word caught my eye. Air. I couldn't help myself. I read through it at breakneck speed, as though my rudeness didn't count if I did it quickly enough. But the words didn't make sense, couldn't make sense, so I read it again, slower, waiting for the meaning to change. The words stubbornly remained, so I read it a third time, and a fourth. It was a draft of a decree to ensure that Fitzroy could never, never inherit the throne. My hands shook. I grabbed the other pages from the shelf. The king had requested an advisor's opinion on the decree. His sickness made him contemplative, he said, and more concerned about the succession than ever. He must be certain the crown was in good hands, and that could never be Fitzroy. If he did not have any other children, his brother must be heir. A third letter discussed plans to send Fitzroy away. Each suggestion had been analyzed based on how valuable it made Fitzroy look. A survey on his father's behalf, for example, or a diplomatic mission would make him look too important. Perhaps banishment would be better. The king had resisted the idea. Fitzroy was still his son, after all, but had agreed that alternatives were difficult to find. "Freya, what are you doing?" I jumped. Fitzroy stood in the doorway. Hair must by sleep. I tightened my grip on the papers. "What is this?" All the color drained from his face. "Freya," he said carefully. "I know what that looks like, but listen to me. You know what it looks like?" I laughed. I didn't know why. The sound was too low, too sharp. "Tell me you didn't put this here. Tell me this is Holt trying to turn me against you." He didn't reply. "You hid this from me." Holt had been right. The certainty of it turned my stomach. "You knew your father wasn't planning to make you his heir. He was going to exile you, and you hid it from me." "I did. But please, Freya, listen." He took a step toward me. My heart was pounding in my ears, humiliation burning in my stomach. "What can you possibly have to say? I didn't know that's what my father was planning. You have to believe me. I only found out when I read these notes in the lab. I promise." "So why did you hide it?" "I panicked. I thought, I didn't know what would happen if anyone else found out. Your advisors already distrust me. Are you surprised with this? I didn't want you to distrust me, too. I thought if you read that, I don't know what I thought, Freya. But you have to believe me. I panicked, but I wasn't involved. You lied to me, and you harmed my investigation." The first was worse. It scalded me, stealing my breath. But I had to mention the science. I had to remember what was important, not me and him. It had never been me and him. "You had the motive, Fitzroy. You had it, and you hid it from me. What else am I supposed to believe? I told you,
I lost everything that night. You would have lost everything if that night hadn't happened. It says it right here, Fitzroy. So don't tell me you had nothing to gain from his death. I was shaking.